life might hand you budgets, schedules, family, and responsibility. But driving shouldn't be just another chore.
We're here to help you find a car you love. Something that fits your budget and your needs, but is fun to drive and makes you look back. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
I should start by saying that I think the world is not as crazy as I once feared.
Oh, no.
I know that's controversial to start a podcast with in this day and age, but follow me. Here's where I'm going. If you've been listening for a while, especially if you listened last week, we mentioned, Paul found, okay, we've been talking about cheap.
I got a little excited, okay?
You did. That's fair. That happens. We've been talking about cheap Ford Fiesta STs, and Paul found a $7,500 one, and I had my mind warped.
So mind was warped.
Seriously.
And I failed to notice a few things.
So we dug in. We actually dug into this car, and we discovered that it was well photographed and actually a salvage title car being sold.
Yeah,
so
but it runs at least.
Yeah, it's fine. And the pictures were good, but that's why it was $7,500. So for those of you who almost, like me, almost lost your grip on the reality of cars because you can't believe those cars are that disposable, they're not quite that disposable yet. But this proves two things. One, shop carefully. And two,
yes.
Paul and I are not perfect, nor will we be.
No, we've never claimed that.
You know what? I promise you, when you hear us say something boneheaded, you're right. We're sometimes boneheads, but we're doing our best to be honest with you guys.
Yeah.
We have a really cool podcast coming right now. So thanks again for being with us.
Excellence, not perfection, right? That's what we're always striving for, is excellence,
not perfection. It's two podcasts a week. We try really hard, but sometimes my mouth runs away a little bit. That happens.
Well, as Todd said, we have a very special guest joining us, Nick Griot from Griot's Garage. He and I got to talking, about a month ago when I was in Washington, and I'm so thrilled to have you, Nick. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
A lot of questions on social media, which we'll get to, but I'm thrilled that you're actually going to help us debate Garrett. He's a CPA, Certified Public Accountant in San Diego, and he writes to us. So, Garrett, you are the lucky guy. You've got three people debating a car for you this podcast.
Which means we'll either find you answers or you'll walk away even more confused. We're unsure at this time, yeah.
But to start with, I'm so glad, Nick, that you're here, because you have been very supportive of us as a show, and I've used Griot's for 18 years, kind of, somewhere in there.
Hang on. I should stop you real quick.
Because, it's been a while.
Because you are the car care fanatic of the two of us. I feel really, really happy to drive things like my Lotus and go, oh, it's dirty. Okay, I got to drive it again. That's who I am compared to you. But I will say, for those of you that are going, you guys are having a sponsor on, let me be clear for those of you who don't understand. Paul's used these products forever.
Yeah.
And
we
actually pursued Griot's to want to have them support our TV show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we actually do use these products. Now, I am the newbie. Probably 10 years in, I'm still the newbie using these products. Paul keeps going, well, there's this. I'm like, it does what now? I had no idea. So Paul now has family in Tacoma, and so he wandered into the Griot's factory one day and just kind of went, oh, it's a candy store. And now
it's
we have
flagship.
Guys with us on the TV show, which is awesome. Yeah. Thank you, Nick. And I'm glad that you guys – honestly, I'll probably just sit here. This is almost a watch podcast for me. I won't have much to say. You guys will have tons, which is great.
Well, Nick had me over to their flagship store. It's in Tacoma, and thankfully, Nick, you took me around into the back of the shop where you've got projects, you've got – you know, the place where you photograph people's cars and put them on the cover. And then you and I got to talking about your background. And I just thought you could relate that conversation. It's something that I wanted to have our audience hear, your education and your real estate and how that kind of wound you to working for the company.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate your guys' support as well. And my story probably isn't too unique in that I was born to a car fanatic and I didn't really have much choice about loving cars, because I was always surrounded by them. I think my dad tells a story that when I was, you know, in the hospital, he was in the waiting room with a Porsche Panorama, and he took a picture of it over my head.
You're
while I was
kidding me.
The disease strikes early.
I grew up with a lunatic for a father who I now have the pleasure of working with. You know, I've worked for the company in a lot of capacities since I was really young. My first job was in the warehouse, and then once I figured out what my market value was for all the detailing skills my dad taught me, I started a detailing company, which I carried through high school and college. And was quite an enterprise. And then I went to school to be a doctor.
I didn't know that.
Mistake. And I ended up, you know, majoring in economics, which led me to you know, my career in commercial real estate. And I came home. I went to school in Atlanta at Emory University, and it's a great school. I learned a lot about myself and got a good degree, which, again, allowed me to be gainfully employed in 2009.
Oh, yeah.
Which was unique.
Yeah.
For all my buddies that graduated at the same time.
Yeah, for sure.
Going into the finance industry.
Wow.
I came into my dad's office, and he straight up told me that he didn't want me to work for him.
Really?
Because interesting. He wanted me to do what I loved. And at that point, I'm, you know, 22 years old. They're kind of limited options with regards to, again, just it's not a thriving economy. But I just started picking up the phone, and after working with my dad to finish our facility here in Tacoma, Washington, I met a broker who brought me into the commercial real estate world. I worked in that industry for 5 years. I absolutely loved it. It was a fascinating time to be in Seattle, where, again, we're still experiencing some rampant growth due to Amazon and a lot of the tech companies.
Yeah, no
so
kidding.
It's a great learning experience.
Along with some traffic I experience every time I'm there. There's a bit of traffic.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And again, I've since moved away from Seattle because of said traffic. I brought my... my wife down to Tacoma, and she was not happy about that at first, but she's coming around. But,
all right, cool.
You know, at the end of my real estate career, for anybody who's familiar with that industry, like a real estate broker or even a residential, you've got multiple things going on at once. And in commercial, you're dealing with other people's businesses. You need to find them a place to do, their, you know, what's best for their company. So you're learning a lot about multiple different companies at once. And one of the projects I ended my career working on was looking for a new facility for Greer's Garage.
Ah.
And in kind of going through the exercise with my own dad and learning about what the needs were at the time, I realized, man, I already know this. I know what this company needs. I was the resident car guy at my real estate office. People would pull me down into the parking garage and, you know, I had to wear a suit every day, and I'd be on my stomach looking at somebody's undercarriage. Like, it just didn't back up.
Nice.
You know, I came back into my dad and I said, you know, I know that I love this, and this is what I want to do. I want to work for you at Greer's Garage. And it was he was extremely happy to hear that. But, you know, what he told me to do is he's like, okay, well, that's great. We need a, you know, national presence. So get out of my office, and you're going to drive a truck around the country and start an events program. So that's how I came back into Greer's Garage. I just had, you know, truly a kind of epiphany that all of my energy that I was splitting amongst five other people's businesses, I could really channel and devote to something that I loved and cared for. That is cars and helping people take care of them.
Well, I've just seen such a family presence whenever I'm there, you know, just talking to you and talking to everybody there. It just seems like such a family oriented kind of mindset. You had mentioned your dad wanted to be a race car driver too.
Yeah. So that was, when he graduated from school, he went to Boulder in the early 80s and, he swears he was, you know, straight edge guy, and I do, you know, understand that about him. I can see that happening.
But then you're thinking Boulder in the 80s. I understand where you're
right.
I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, two of my siblings have also graduated from there, so I've heard some stories. But he worked at a museum in Boulder, Colorado, and he kind of always was working around cars, and he went back to L.A. and ended up working at Jim Russell's racing school there. He was an instructor and a mechanic.
Oh, that's cool.
This was kind of the time where, you know, it wasn't a very popular thing, so they'd fix the cars up, and the mechanics knew which ones were the fastest ones, and they'd take part in all sorts of shenanigans, but it never really led to a professional opportunity. And so he actually, during that time, he actually met my mom and managed her dressmaking business.
That's a shift. Okay.
Probably imagine wasn't exactly fulfilling to him.
Can't imagine why. That's very strange.
Right.
Me, yeah.
So strange.
Yeah. And he pretty much started the company by, you know, he spoke with my grandfather who ran a catalog company as well. And, he encouraged my dad to start a company that wasn't regionally dependent. And the catalog at the time, before the internet was around, was a great avenue to that.
Sure, yeah.
So he would spend time going up to Monterey for the kind of Rolex mm-hmm. Historics and mm-hmm. Pebble Beach Peak, and started just by putting flyers on guys' windshields and, you know, would you like a catalog with all these unique tools and kind of garage organizational and lifestyle accessories? And just there was enough demand from that type of prospecting that he started a business. So 29 years later, so
wow.
It's pretty wild.
That's fascinating. To hear the Monterey connection, Nick, because I don't know if you know this, but the whole reason that Paul uses the products is from going up to that show and seeing and asking what those guys with those crazy cars were using. And he went, well, if they're using it on this, I'm going to use it on
that,
my stuff.
Honestly, that was my mindset, because first Pebble Beach that. Monterey show was in 99. I was in Art Center in school until 98.
Yeah.
And then finally had an opportunity to go in 99. And then I was just wandering around the paddock going, wow, look at these cars. Okay, mm-hmm. So what are you using? How do you make it look like that? I honestly was asking and just thinking, there's all kinds of stuff at car parts stores.
Of course. How do you
know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I saw the logo on the side of trailers and pickup trucks and that kind of thing, and then just came home and did my own research, and that was my kind of how I got into it, interestingly. So that's amazing that was where he started.
We've come quite a long way, for sure.
So you said your dad told you to get out of the office and go drive a truck. So you were driving the event truck around, and I think you've done a new heavy duty event truck, haven't you?
We had always been supportive. I mean, Monterey was a natural event for us. It kind of combines the concours element and then the racing element. But there's a ton. I mean, there's more car shows in the U.S. than any person could possibly imagine attending.
Agreed.
And,
yeah, insane.
From our perspective, that's where the most, enthusiastic people are going. A racetrack is a natural environment, but not everybody has a race car. A car show can be a place for people with similar interests to congregate. So whether it's a hot rod show or a BMW or Porsche show, and they are always in need of money because it's not easy to rent a huge venue that can accommodate a ton of cars, whether it be a fairground or a golf course. And so they seek support in the form of vendors. We had kind of always understood that, but we really hadn't had a very well organized approach to it. And so when I came back to the company, that was the opportunity. We were growing at a rate that necessitated a presence to be felt nationally. So Paul, you were mentioning the family aspect. One of our longest tenured employees, who's literally done every position in the building, in the company at one point in time, he just celebrated his 22nd anniversary with the company.
Oh, wow. My gosh. That's cool.
He and I were tasked with forming this events program. So we had 4 months to get everything up and running. And by June, we were driving our brand new truck and trailer to Colorado for the first show of our inaugural events program, and that was 4 years ago. And since then, we've continued to grow, and we started off organized, and we've become more and more organized, and that's allowed us to invest in what was a Dodge Dually and a 30-foot trailer is now a full semi truck and race trailer. That's
about so cool,
5-foot setup. So it's a massive jump, but it just validates really everything that we started doing, and just shows that's where I still believe the greatest customers are met. It really is an opportunity to look at somebody's particular car, help them fix a problem, and just shake somebody's hand and help them, because there are plenty of people that just want to make their car look nice, and then there are plenty of people that are willing to go way off the deep end and spend 72 hours working on their car. So you have to be able to talk to everybody.
Sure.
And
you just described me versus Paul, by the way. I just thought I'd clarify that.
And we have customers that are all over that map. Our best customers tend to be towards Paul's end, but
I understand. And the cars prove it.
We make products that are easy enough for everybody to get good results with.
So, well, thankfully.
Nick, something that really struck me is when I had the behind the scenes tour and you took me through was the shop back there. It's not just car care products. You guys have mechanics, and you're tearing into cars and you're restoring them or upgrading them or rebuilding them. You're tearing everything apart. I mean, there were a few cars I was astounded to see back there, but just the builds alone, and not just to build show cars, but just to understand cars and how they work and what product would matter, to somebody doing this. And that's what really struck me. I was, like I said, pretty astounded to see that. I think that's a bit rare from the kind of products your company does and produces to actually doing builds.
Yeah, and so again, kind of that, my dad's background as a mechanic and race car driver, he's always had an affinity for, you know, doing every aspect of the car. Obviously, there's some things that, you know, it's better to pay somebody to do something, like paint comes to mind, or like a really high-end engine tune, something like that.
Sure, yeah.
But, you know, as the facility that we're currently in has provided us the space to have a full-service restoration shop, mm-hmm. and we develop products based upon our experiences with these cars, and it's pretty much every car that has a clear coat or paint system that is meant to look good and deep and shiny, we work on, you know, and can accept our products. So our taste isn't really exclusive to one, you know, particular make or model. I mean, we have, Paul, when you're here, we've got a, you know, pink Fiat Jolly.
Yeah.
then we have, you know, old Formula One cars that we put back together as well. So we really run the gamut of materials and just problems that we're attacking with regards to whether it be rust or, you know, oxidized paint, faded rubber, things that, you know, you may not be able to find parts for these old cars. And people around us may have these old cars and say, you know, I've got this same problem. How do you address it? Well, actually, we've done that. You know, we've fixed it this way.
Right, right.
And if we can find a chemical solution, we're going to make it and put it out to market. If we can find a tool, and then we'll also bring it to market. So that's really where a lot of it starts, is on our own cars. And the restoration shop, it's you know, we're making and restoring cars that we like, and it's not just high-end stuff. It's stuff that we want to drive.
Yeah, the drool was forming, I have to admit. And Nick graciously let me sit in one particular car that I was astounded by. And then, of course, there were the Formula One cars and just the projects. It was Candyland, let's put it that way.
Well, I'm glad you drive them, too. I'm glad they're not just showpieces. That's a huge thing we talk about on the show all the time, is that you can have a great car that you love and you make nice, but you got to take it out and drive it.
Yeah, today I rode to work in a 1964 Cobra that is raw aluminum. Yeah, it's about to get repainted, but, you know, most people wouldn't take that car on the streets, and we're taking it. It's not even done. and we cruised to work. You know, the things, my hair was pretty windswept, and I didn't need any coffee this morning. But
for sure, yeah.
But when you get sun in Washington State, you take advantage of it, and the cars come out for sure.
And this is proof of your car.
Yeah, it's always been about driving. That's why I think it's such a natural connection with you guys. I mean, you have to be able to enjoy the car. You can get too deep into the detailing wormhole where if your car doesn't have a scratch, that also means it probably doesn't leave its parking spot. And
yeah, yeah. I obsess over the scratches, but I have to balance that and temper that with get out there and drive it.
Yes, you also have me standing behind you going, well, I'm going to take my car for a drive while you polish that.
And I say that, and it's a double-edged sword, right?
Yeah,
because if you're preparing your car for a show, you want it to be scratch-free and present as well as possible.
Right.
So you need to be able to get there. But at the same time, you know, the car doesn't make you happy when it's, you're not smelling gas, or you're not hearing it, or you're not driving down the road. I think there's a balance there, for sure.
There's a car, that green E46 BMW that you share with your dad and I think everybody else. It's got the M3 engine in it, I think. Is that your daily, or is that just like a shared car? And you were telling me about that as a build car, and I was really intrigued by that.
Oh, so that's a pretty, it's actually an E30 318. It's a 1988 318, which was the lowliest the econ model of that era. You know, just it came stock with a 1.8 liter engine. It wasn't very powerful, but you could put 600,000 miles on it. In fact, our old curator had one that had nearly 500,000 miles on it, and he had never rebuilt the motor.
Wow.
So, but this one has pretty much all E30 M3 guts, and we just, you know, trade this car around. It's, you know, the S14 motor that's in it is about just under 200 horsepower, which is a significant jump over the 1.8, but it's totally built up with suspension, wider wheels and tires, and it just is a demon. It screams, but you can get yourself in trouble really quick with that motor because it's not meant for, you know, commuting. It's meant to be thrown around. So that generally is what happens. But it's a car that is reliable, and we work on it a lot. We all know, you know, how to get around those old BMWs. So we get to share that one, and really that motor needs to be driven. So it's one of the cars that gets driven quite a bit.
Nick, nice. That's awesome. Well, we should move on to our car debate. We should all see if we can help Garrett, who's writing to us from San Diego.
He's CPA on San Diego, as I mentioned. And Garrett, you've got three people deciding for you. His first car was an 05 Jeep Wrangler, which he had in San Diego, and he built this up to be a rock crawler and daily driver, and then he moved to Chicago.
By the way, I like the idea of a rock crawler and daily driver, because those things really don't go together.
That's just tire noise.
You know, exactly. And the traffic stopped in front of me, so I'll just crawl over it. I mean, that's kind of the only thing exactly. that makes any sense. But anyway, yeah.
All right, so he moved to Chicago and then realized it would be stolen instantly, so he sold that and picked up an 07 Jeep Liberty, as one does, to handle the winter. And
I guess.
The car that won't be looked at. It won't be stolen.
Yeah.
Don't.
Nobody's lusting after your Liberty. This is true, yeah.
Your insurance probably drops, so you're fine.
Yeah.
But then he and his wife moved back to San Diego in 2015, picked up a new 4Runner for his wife, an 09 Audi A3 for him, and then, of course, he had to get the rock crawler again, so yes. We got a 99 Jeep Cherokee. That's the toy. That's the rock crawler.
That's sticking around, and so is the 4Runner, luckily.
Well, yeah. He got this A3 because he likes the hot hatch thing. He wanted good gas mileage. He's got a 28-mile drive to work, but he still wanted something fun to drive. And also, his brother had this Audi connection. His brother used to work for Audi and mm-hmm. had this Audi parts thing. And because apparently the A3 had been unreliable in his year of ownership, he replaced, the water pump, cam cover sealant, oil pan at only 50,000 miles.
Yeah.
And so he's thinking, all right, is this thing going to last me?
And the hookup went away. That's the other thing. It's the double-edged sword there. It's the reality of what is this going to cost me next, followed by now I can't get this stuff cheap. So the A3 must go. And Garrett is 6'4 and 280, he tells us, and his wife is 6'1, so their kids are going to be giants.
Yes.
And so they have to figure out the kid reality of a car that can handle kids and then also can take them as big people. This is not the 5-foot-tall family sliding the seats forward. So he would like to get something, since they just had a baby girl, congratulations, they would like to have 4 doors and be able to fit a rear-facing child seat in the back.
Right.
And they are large people. We understand the tallness. We get it. So we got to solve that as well. He's like the A3, except it clearly needs to be out here. The Paul limit of budget here is 20 grand. He'd like to spend more like 17.
All right, 20.
And
huh?
He's hoping to be on the back end of depreciation if possible.
I'm going to give Nick the same leeway, 20 grand.
Yes. Oh, I used it too.
You know, I figured.
This is what happens with the Paul limiter.
You know, if you suggest a price and then there's a bigger number just past that in the sentence, guess which number I'm going to be using. All right, so Garrett loves the Focus ST, and he would get that car right now if it weren't a manual because of the traffic. And then, of course, the Cherokee Rock Crawler is a manual too, so he's thinking, all right,
yeah.
What if the Audi breaks down? It would probably be going away, and he's looking at large cars and has named the Dodge Charger, named the Cadillac ATS and CTS, mm-hmm. even though he's even not sure the Cadillac has enough backseat space.
The ATS does not have a very big backseat. I will take that point.
Yeah, the legroom isn't great. He's also liking the WRX hatch, but he's saying they're crazy expensive around him in that area.
They're crazy expensive. This is why I recommend the Saab 92X, the Saabaru, because everybody's chasing and searching for the WRX, and nobody thinks to do the Saab.
He says he likes that Crosstrek, Subaru Crosstrek too, but
no,
might
don't.
Be too slow.
No, you don't. I mean, here's the thing. Subaru is selling them as fast as they can make them, and they're perfectly fine. I've driven one in weather. They are fine. They are not an enthusiast car.
No, we're not saying that. But he needs something, and he's also saying, I'm bummed I never got a 2-door sports car before he had a kid. Mm-hmm. So he's suggesting, his recommendation is to anybody without a family yet, get a 2-seat sports car.
Yes, but see, hang on, Garrett.
You are the antithesis of that.
Hang on,
Garrett.
You've
disproven, which I love.
This is the thing, man. I get it. And look, if you have more than one child, this gets harder. I have one child. Our son is 8. He's fairly tall for his age. But the truth is, somehow, inexplicably, by the way, I did not set out to do this. My wife has that great Cayenne that she loves. Okay?
And that
is our family car. And I call that our family car because, being that there are 3 of us, if 3 of us have to go anywhere, we can only take the Cayenne. Because
right,
I now have wound up with a summer car in the Lotus Elise and a winter car in the Mini Cooper with no back seat. The back
tiny
seat's been removed.
British 2-seaters.
I own 2 2-seat cars and I am a father. Now, I'm not saying this is smart, but I am saying to you, You don't have to walk away from two-seat, two doors just because you became a parent. What you have to figure out is, how do we make this car work in our life? Now, A, I have a tolerant wife, but B, you have not only the 4Runner, but you also have this other Cherokee here. If
True.
You're in a bind, you have...
It will get you to work.
You have a series of cars that can solve all
Sure.
of the life stuff. So I'll be honest, I didn't break your rule, but I do have to kind of challenge you, Garrett, and just say, what car would you like that you think you can't get? Because I say to you, you're a dad, fine, still buy the fun car. There's
yeah.
a way to make that work in your life. I'm the crazy one, I get it, but I'm putting it out there.
Garrett's also mentioning he would love to have something American to work on himself, if possible, but he's not married to the idea.
Well, what's happened is that Garrett opened the hood of a modern car and went, where do I put a hand to fix anything? It's just this big
yeah.
plastic sheet of, I don't know how to work on that. Oh, look, there's the dipstick, and we're done.
Okay, so we're diving into choices here. And before we get to that, Nick, back to you. I'm curious, hearing Garrett's story here and hearing what he wants, and then it's sort of like, you know, in sales, there's that question behind the question. People say this, but then there's that reason that actually kind of meets their needs. I'm wondering if this is that kind of case. On the other hand, he does say, I need a larger car. So there mm-hmm. is that. We can't just suggest M235Is and be done with it.
Or yeah.
I get that.
This is not the family that needs a Lotus Elise. This is clearly what's going on.
Right. We can't just throw caution to the wind. But Nick, I'm curious to know where you went, what you're thinking for Garrett here in the sedan, or maybe you've got something crazy for him.
You know, I read it as well, and he seems to have an affinity towards Jeeps mm-hmm. and wants to avoid the European maintenance. I would have gone GTI. I love GTIs, and I think that those have enough space. You know, I'm 6'2 myself, and I've owned a couple of them. You can definitely fit a kid seat in it, but mm-hmm. The fun factor comes from a manual in that. So that kind of led me down another path, and again, going back to the American thought. You know, the new SRTs that they're putting out have a lot more horsepower, but they've been making SRT models for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
what I thought is a car that I always lusted after was a Dodge Magnum SRT.
Wonderful.
You've got Ooh. A kit carrier, 425 horsepower. You can put exhaust, chip it, and do a lot of stuff. You're not going to get gas mileage out of that
no.
If you go that way. But even so, if you got a newer iteration of a Charger, those V6s still put out 300 horsepower and can
yeah.
be tinkered with as well.
Yep.
So
yep.
I lent myself towards a larger American sedan, and the CTS, I think what you're going to find is you're going to have, you know, higher service charges. And with the Charger, you're going to have more engine options. And I really love the modern interfaces. You know, I spent a couple of years in a Dodge truck, you know, driving around the country. And
oh, right. Yeah. Pulling the trailer.
It's
yeah.
very functional. So I'm, you know, a big guy already says he would consider an American option, is steering himself away from European maintenance and part costs. I'd go with a Dodge Charger, or if you really want a hot rod and you want to throw mileage out the window, then go with an SRT option of one of those cars. You'd find a lot of them.
Yeah, the Magnum's a great one. We have a friend, Alec, who listens to the show.
Yeah, right.
Magnum forever.
Yeah.
And the thing is, those are a moment in time car. They just, where did that come from? Why did it get made? But it's very cool if you want to have one.
Somebody lobbied for that car.
And it is the mean, angry wagon. You know, I mean, you could get the Cadillac CTS V wagon, but those are, first off, they're almost three times its price.
Right.
And secondly, they're needle in a haystack to find, whereas the Magnums are just out there.
That's a great choice,
Nick. That's a very good
one. I like your thoughtfulness there. I like the research there. That's well done.
I love station wagons, so I lean towards them all the time. But, you know, again, American, you get some American size, you get some raw horsepower, but... you throw gas mileage out. So I don't know.
This proves two things. One, Nick really is that guy people kept asking about cars. And secondly,
yeah.
he could be a car journalist because we have an unnecessary obsession with wagons. I don't know why that is, but there you go.
Nick, you're in. So well done. That was excellent. Right. I love that you can, you know, throw power at that thing mm-hmm. and, you know, really customize it, make it yours. Yeah, the interface, you and I have talked about, if that's something that bugs you, you can change that. Aftermarket stuff is great for that. But, this could work.
But FCA does. I mean, you know from your 8-inch screen in your Jeep. I mean, FCA, that whole system is a great system. You had weird issues with yours, but by and large, every car we're in, we're just like, this just works.
Interesting. Along those same lines, I was looking at Chrysler 300s.
Okay.
And I found a 2014, the John Varvatos edition that, you know, kind of spiced up, gussied up, nice looking 300C.
Is this like the Gucci Fiat 500?
It's
is that what
Gucci-fied
it is?
Or whatever.
Awesome.
John
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Anyway, 20 grand with 38,000 miles. Same kind of thing. I'm still thinking about that Magnum wagon.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
But, Garrett, if you get away from that, there is a 2015 Infiniti Q50 Premium. 39,000 miles for 20K.
That was on my list. That was on my you may not have thought of this list. I mean, that's well done. I like that.
I've moved away from American cars, and I like that you're wanting that. But, you know, if you're just thinking, all right, you know, reliability long term, you know, that kind of thing. This used to be the G37, so the Q50 from 2015. Mm-hmm. And I'm also landing on a 2017 Mazda 6. You and I have talked about this for a long time. It's bigger than you think.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, Accords and Camrys have grown too, but the 6 is bigger than you think. 20K for a 2017 Mazda 6 Touring, 26,000 miles. I'm still weighing the, you know, I was looking at Lexus's Lexi.
I like Lexi. Let's go with that.
Acura TLs. I'm just thinking, all right, that was the rhinoplasty era of the Acura TL that nobody really loved. So I'm not suggesting that, but
the Lexus. If you got a Lexus with the F Sport pack, you wind up with rear wheel drive. You may enjoy that car.
You could, but the F Sport was not available for 20 grand. You couldn't even touch one. So I'm thinking, okay. I had to leave it there.
Okay. Well, I brought I thought of one other one, and those of you who listen to the podcast more than 5 minutes will not be surprised I'm going to bring this car up. But I was a little disappointed, but I looked initially, and that is the Chevy SS.
Yeah, I was wondering
because
if you
it's the great alternative. To the Charger, and I think, look, it. Let's be honest, it looks more boring, and it drives better. So you have these options. The problem is, 22 grand is about where those bottom out right now. So we're just above your budget. So the question becomes: A, do you want to stretch even further? Which I kind of doubt. But I want to let you know that those cars are almost in your reach. So depending upon when you're really shopping and what you really can do, because I'm bringing this for this reason, and I'm defending you, Paul, actually, because the Paul limiter exists because you always blow people's budgets.
I tend to do that.
Honestly, about half the time when you got, and we love these emails, we're making a list to do a podcast with a lot of here's what I bought stuff. But half the time when people write back and go, here's what I got. Almost half those emails halfway through go, well, I doubled my budget from what I told you guys. And we're like, doubled the budget? Doubled
this
it.
This wasn't even like a few $1,000s more. Yeah. You know, we just pushed on
it a
little.
I told you guys 20 grand, but I went out and bought a $55,000. What just happened there?
So you're throwing the Chevy SS in just in case Garrett has a wild hair double his budget.
No, and not because I think he's going to double his budget, but because I'm saying the difference between 20 grand and 22 grand, is in car buying is not much. And if you would rather have the more modern, I'm putting it out there. Now, going back to budget, Pontiac G8s all day long.
Sure.
It is the older Chevy SS. The interior is not quite as nice. It's not quite as modern, obviously, but it is the fantastic. I mean, look, Nick started us with the old American Iron, which I love that Magnum.
Yeah, very
so
cool
So if
choice.
We're going to be in that world, we're in a similar dates to that, and you're buying a Pontiac G8, those are GM parts under there. It's got a decent interior. I prefer the SS, but it's more money. But the G8s, with 20 grand in your pocket, just go buy one.
You know, Garrett, I was thinking with the G8 and with Nick's Magnum suggestion, you can rock your baby girl to sleep just with the power alone. You could sit at the stoplight and gun the engine, and it'll just put her right to sleep.
Just rock the body back and forth.
Four in the morning when you need to take her for a drive because she won't stop crying, you can just put her in the muscle car, and you're good.
I'm going to have to agree with you guys on the G8. My youngest brother has a G8 that he has driven for almost 8 years now.
Hmm.
75,000 miles.
No kidding.
I've driven it to San Francisco and back multiple times with him. Two big guys, plenty of space, interior materials, leave something to be desired, but he's never spent a dollar on maintenance. So it's
cool.
I'd say that kind of falls into my you guys are speaking my language.
Good.
Big American sedans are worthy of a chance. but you're not going to get the mileage. That's about it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's absolutely fair.
There is
you
that.
Could go. You could go the V6 and the G8, get a little bit better gas mileage, but at that point, you may as well just get the V8. Who are we kidding? Right. Who are we kidding? Come
and
on.
Throw performance parts at it just because you can. I think
he's throwing parts at that old Cherokee to go rock crawling again.
That's true. That's where happening. His budget's going.
I think that's where it's happening. But anyway, but I do also like the fact that your wife has a 4Runner that apparently is her commute car. So these are truck people, but I'm glad to get you in a big sedan. That could be really fun. Hopefully, Garrett, something there has been helpful. I love that we had Nick come along and have the Magnum in there. That's cool. That doesn't get mentioned a lot, so that's really good. We are going to stop real quick for some commercials, and we will be right back. If you like Shaquille O'Neal, he has a podcast. Check out The Big Podcast with Shaq every Monday right here at Podcast One.
He's not just talking about sports. From wacky news stories to dumb entertainment rumors, Shaq is there making fun of it all.
Check out The Big Podcast with Shaq at Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Please remember to rate that podcast and this one.
I'm not going very far.
It's too uncomfortable.
I'm in a hurry. Sometimes I just forget.
There's no such thing as a good excuse for not buckling up. You're not only putting yourself at risk of injury or death, it could also cost you lots of money. Cops are writing tickets, so why take the risk? Do the smart thing and start buckling up every trip, day or night. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
You know what's a must-have in your car care arsenal? It's a Brush Hero. This is the water-powered detailing tool that's perfect for tough areas like wheel spokes and engines, tailpipes and grills, and even bicycles. Interestingly, Brush Hero requires no batteries or electricity. It scrubs slowly with an impressive amount of torque.
This was created by Car Guys. It's designed to be tough, quick, and effective without causing damage. It's easy to use. Just hook it up to a standard garden hose, flip the handy on-off switch, and start cleaning. Brush Hero is a great gift idea, and they've got an extensive line of gift sets and accessories.
And now, our listeners can enjoy 10% off their order at brushhero.com with code DRIVER. You can also find the Brush Hero at select Costco and Walmart stores. But don't forget to use the code DRIVER at brushhero.com for 10% off, and all orders over $40 ship free.
Everybody's got a to-do list. You drop off the dry cleaning, you pick up some milk. I've got an idea. Let's add save hundreds of dollars in car insurance.
And the good thing is, you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance.
Having extra money in your pocket might be the most rewarding thing on your to-do list today.
Guys, we're back with Nick Griot from Griot's Garage, and this is going to be all social media questions. And so many of you have asked him, what about, you know, what particular product and you know, what can I do for this area of my car? But there was a question from Wes on Facebook, and he asked, what differentiates the different consortiums of car care collections? He's asking, you know, why would you go for Griot's or Adams or Chemical Guys? Jay Leno has a car care collection now. It seems like everybody has, you know, they've sort of popped up,
I guess. We're almost behind because we don't have an everyday driver car collection.
Right.
Car care
We've got
collection.
Griot's.
Yeah, exactly. Because we're also
That's my thinking.
I have no idea what I'm doing. The last thing you want to do is buy car care stuff from me. Now, you maybe, Paul, but that's why you're talking Griot's. I see where we are.
Well, the question is really for Nick, and I thought, Nick, you could touch on this, and you can see he was just saying, you know, there's specialization, you know, the cost of products over various products, and then when you're standing at a AutoZone or a Napa Auto Parts and you're looking at all this car care stuff, how do you know?
That is not a simple question, but I have a very specific way I think I'd like to answer it. And I think that, you know, in my mind, what differentiates us is that, you know, we still are a manufacturer. And there are a lot of companies in our marketplace that have quality products, but they are not necessarily manufactured by that company. So private labeling is a very common practice, and mostly because it takes a lot to remain compliant with chemicals. And that's a hard thing to keep up with. California, it's a huge, wonderful place with lots of cars and great weather, and so it's kind of considered the mecca of car culture for good reason. However, it has the strictest environmental standards that move very quickly.
Sure.
And as such, a lot of people can't really keep up with those standards. So we, you know, as a manufacturer, we develop every product we make in-house We have a full team of chemists, a laboratory, manufacturing facility, bottling line. We do that all in-house in our facility in Indianapolis. So what that allows us to do is remain flexible with regards to environmental compliance. You know, we can see things coming down the line and be, you know, proactive with that. And really what that just makes us do is be better with our chemistry. We have to, you know, create a product that is superior to the one that preceded it and also environmentally compliant. And when you have a competitor that, you know, does not manufacture that same way, that's already handled for them. And what may happen is in that striving for compliance, that product may change drastically from year to year and maintain a few qualities, for example, smell or color, but its performance is totally changed.
Because
they didn't really invest in that chemistry. So that's a really important thing. And then I think the other thing is that I know everybody that makes our products. I know their names, their kids. They've worked for our company for a long time. So it's in our building. And I think that's still important that, you know, we manufacture something that people enjoy and use in the United States. And we started that early on, and I would hate to imagine what it would cost us to start doing that now, but it's been a really important part of our company. And again, it's allowed us to continue to develop great products and just be sure of everything that goes into our bottle, and then our customer's not going to come back and say, hey, you know, this is all, you know, the same as this other bottle, but it streaks now. What do you do?
Right.
You don't have to answer those questions. So we have complete quality control. And again, we take pride in having manufacturing jobs in the States that, again, we're making products for people that are just like us.
That's cool.
And something, I think there's still something to be said about kind of controlling all of that.
Yeah, there is.
I'll give you a weird one that actually relates to my brain from what Nick's saying. And that is, when I worked in the film industry, one of the film labs is known as Photochem. They're like the independent film
lab. Oh, yeah. You mentioned them a ton.
I used to go to Photochem all the time.
You knew everybody there, too.
I worked there a lot. But, I mean, you've got Deluxe and a lot of the big film labs people have heard of. But while I was in L.A., and this is, you know, the early 2000s that I'm talking about here, a lot of those film labs were closing because of what Nick's talking about, because the chemical requirements and the ideal with heavy-duty chemicals and how is California okay with that, all of those requirements were a constantly moving target. And some of those film labs were closing. And at the time, L.A. had a kibosh on anybody else opening a film lab. You couldn't get the permits to deal in the chemicals. Photochem, who was the somewhat affordable indie guy, was like the last one in. And so that's why all the indie folks went to Photochem, because all the big boys were out of their price. And Photochem was like the last one to get the permits. And that was a family-owned company, and they could do it. So a lot of people started springing up as film labs. But they were film labs in the front store, if you will. But all their printing was being done at Photochem.
Of course. They were using them anyway. Interesting. Well, that brings me to just, I guess, international shipping. And there was a question on Instagram from C. Garrett. He's saying, you know, love Griot's products. Is there anything in the works to expand the product line at AutoZone or other retailers? Anything, Nick, that you can share about, you know, your plans? Obviously, don't, you know, give away the plans, but, you know, any thoughts that you can share?
Well, yeah, I mean, AutoZone has been a great part of our business. Basically, you know, as our business has grown, so has our availability. So AutoZone is one of our major retail partners. We have Advance Auto Parts, Pep Boys, and O'Reilly's as well that also sell our products. And generally, we focus on the most highly consumable products in those spaces. And it's a very competitive marketplace. Again, we believe we have great products, but there are also other very reputable companies in that space. And so that actually becomes a real estate game, which is interesting.
Sure.
So would we love to have every one of our products in there? Yes. However, it's a balance of, again, what demand is there, what space is there. And I think, you know, our goal is to always create a competitive product that outperforms something that may be on that shelf. And as such, and again, because of our infrastructure that allows us to develop product, we are constantly developing new products. And I think that there's a lot of consumer confusion. And to go back to Wes's question before, it's, you know, what differentiates every particular product? You know, it's kind of like a half step of use. Well, there are tons of different materials and scenarios that people encounter with their cars. You know, vinyl is different from leather.
Yeah.
We are able to develop products that treat these different materials differently. And so we're constantly developing new stuff. And this, you know, we kind of launch our products with our handbook season, where our handbook is what we call our catalog, because we believe it has some instructional capacity as well as being a sales tool.
Mm-hmm.
So this summer we have a really exciting new line that I want to encourage everybody to look for. I'm not going to spill the beans about it, but it's a great new chemical set and grouping of tools that we think will really change the way people approach washing their car.
Hmm.
Really, really fun system. Yeah, that I'm pretty excited about that. And you know, we're about a month away from launching that line. And then another big thing is that our, you know, we focus a lot on machines. And Paul, I don't know if you've ever used a random orbital to polish your car, but
I have. I'll admit, I bought the Griot's.
Of course you have.
It was actually the Porter Cable one from, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. I mean, I was invested early.
Yes, you were.
Yeah, I probably packed that Porter Cable in our warehouse back when I was in high school. So,
oh my gosh.
Very, very good machines. But we have developed our own tool, and we've been selling that for over 12 years. And that whole kind of educational aspect where people are afraid of these machines, like, oh, I'm going to do enormous amounts of damage. Well, I've been using one since I was 14 years old. Again, kind of my dad forcing me to learn this skill set.
Which is good,
but I've
though.
Never done any damage. And so we focus a lot on educating people about that. And as such, we've expanded our tool line. And so without saying any more, there's some exciting new developments in our power tool line as well that you can look for later this year.
Cool.
And ideally, on the international point, that is just a matter of time, I think. We go to SEMA every year, and we have a ton of international demand. And I think that, you know, we are a family-owned company. We continue to grow, but we have never, you know, sought to put ourselves in a position of risk just for the sake of growth. And we want to retain a high level of service and product quality. And so I think that will come in time. We have a very long time horizon for the company, and we just want to be sure that everybody's experience with our company is the very best we can, you know, promise. And if we overextended ourselves too quickly, I think we'd see an equal and opposite retraction at some point in time. So we're going to get there. And, you know, we have a lot of people calling from all over the world saying, I need your stuff. And they managed to get it somehow. I don't know how, but
that's cool.
They fly here, pack their suitcases.
The yeah, I mean, the internet's a wonderful tool. I don't know. It's yeah. beyond me.
And I ask on behalf of so many of our listeners are in Australia and Canada and mm-hmm. the UK, Ireland, and I mean, all over the world. And so I'm asking on behalf of them and shout out to all you guys listening that are not in the U.S. Thank you so much. We love hearing from you. We've had people write to us from Poland and Sweden and Pakistan and
everywhere.
It's kind so of many. Yeah. We've done debates and we'll continue to. But yeah, like I said, Nick, I just kind of ask on behalf of them hearing this podcast thinking, all right, you know, it's not on my local shelf, you know, at my favorite mm-hmm. store. So how can I do that? But apparently the internet is the answer.
That's right both now. The best and sure. worst of every answer. Yeah.
I absolutely love to travel. I would love to be traveling all over the world on sales trips. It'd be a great, you know, I'm sure my wife would enjoy that as well. So we will get there. I promise you. I really, really am looking forward to that. But in the meantime, again, we'll get there eventually, and it's not too far off.
All right, good.
So did you see Dale's question? Our friend Dale.
I did. I was wondering if we should end on that question just because
okay,
of...
Okay, we can come back around. We can come back around because he's in Tacoma. I'm fine with that.
Yes, and this is the question. We'll tee you up for that. Go ahead and read this question.
Well, yeah, the question is what F1 team would you race for? And I'm sitting here thinking about it, and I'm having trouble. I have to come back
to that. Well, I liked it because Nick's dad was, you know, a mechanic, and he's got F1 cars, vintage F1 cars sitting in the shop that I'm just going crazy about. And so, all right, so think about that. For the wrap-up question.
You see Shane's question? I had to laugh at Shane's question. Shane wrote in on Instagram and he said, what are the best products and strategies for really tough messes that come with kids in the car?
Oh, yeah.
And he's specifically asking about melted crayons in a cup holder. And Shane, look, I obviously am not the talented guy in this regard, but I'm going to say that car never recovers. That car probably just has to be burned
from
at some point.
Melted crayons?
Yeah, just all of the stuff that kids bring – some of that will never get out. I will give you my answer, Shane. My answer is you pay somebody to detail that car and you don't worry about it yourself because you're just – that's never going to be solved. I realize there's probably a better answer, but Shane, I feel like you and I are similar. And so there's part of it that just goes, yep, that's never coming out.
That reminds me of a car I detailed in high school. My buddy and I called it the Cheerio Van.
Self-explanatory.
Yeah, we probably pulled out two boxes. I'm not kidding. It was a minivan, and every one of those channels was filled to the brim with Cheerios and everything else you can imagine. So
of course it was.
I still remember the exact place I detailed it as well.
Oh, my gosh. No
but,
way.
I mean, you got to introduce heat back to those crayons, unfortunately. It's not so risky to get into an interior material. But, yeah, and if you have something that can break down wax like that, it's most likely a solvent, which would damage your interior materials. But the best product I could recommend from our product line would be our Citrus Multi-Purpose Cleaner. It is insanely versatile. It's, you know, an aerosol delivery, and I pulled 55-year tobacco tar off of the interior trim of my Lincoln Continental project.
Good grief.
So it's got some capacity, and it's safe on painted surfaces as well. So that'd be where I steer you.
See, Shane, I was just thinking you had to give the car a Viking burial, and Nick comes out here with an actual answer. Look at that. Wow, okay.
Yeah. Plus, it sounds like it'll make it smell good, too. It's not going to smell like crayons.
Nice. Yeah.
Okay, so a question about covering cars from Daddy's Fast
Carls.
There
are a few, actually.
There's a few, as a matter of fact. So this is, you know, Daddy's Fast Carls, he's asking, is it wrong to cover my WRX while I park it at work because of the dust and the hate? He hates that it gets dirty after a day of sitting in the parking lot, essentially, and he'd like to keep it as clean as possible, but he thinks he would be judged if he covers it. And you probably will get noticed, you know, if you're the only car in the parking lot.
You'll be that guy. It's like the guy that always covers his car when he comes to work. But you know what, man? It comes back to the thing that you always say, Paul, about you trying to save yourself work.
If
it's going to hassle you that far. Now, here's the car cover conundrum. And Covercraft has been great to us, and they're a sponsor with us for Season 3 as well. So we're excited about them. And we've also got Sean in here asking about parking his car outside underneath a tree that gives a lot of pollen. Same thing, car cover for you, my friend. So Covercraft is great for you there. But here's the thing. There are the camp that says never put a car cover on your car because you'll screw up the paint. And then there is the camp that I'm in, which is I have to park a car outside, and guess what? It's dirty, and it's been 5 minutes. Luckily, a lot of these car covers now fit well enough. They don't move much. And I
so
tell
it's
you,
not like that sandpaper action in between the cover and the paint.
Yeah, what's been your experience with that, Nick?
Well, if you're definitely getting a cover that is fit to your particular car, I think the notion that you're going to have a lot of motion that would create that damage is only a reality if the car is significantly dirty. Technically, every time you touch the surface of your car, and this is going to give some people hives, you are abrading the paint and you are, you know, doing minor amounts of damage or scratching the car. It's when those scratches become exceptionally concentrated that you start to notice a visual difference in the quality of your finish. So I have no problem being the guy that covers my car. That is the nature of my job. But at the same time, the people that are giving you grief for covering your car are never going to understand why you cover it to begin with.
Fair.
And everybody who understands why you cover it is probably your friend. So
that's good.
I'm totally fine with covering your car everywhere you go. But if you have any doubt about how clean your car is, like if you've got a lot of dust or a lot of pollen, I would generally suggest cleaning the car before covering it. Just because
I agree with that. Yes, definitely.
A cover generally has some weight to it, and you've got to stretch it out over the car. And if you have something really heavy and nasty, like a piece of a branch that has fallen off, and all of a sudden you push that into your trunk,
yikes!
Then you're gonna wish you never covered your car. But you know, if you've spent all weekend cleaning the car, you drive it to work, and you've got a tiny little bit of dust, throw your cover on it. You know, but if you have any doubt, always introduce a liquid, probably a detailer of some sort, to do some light cleaning. That liquid's just going to ensure that you create a medium so that you don't press those contaminants, dust, pollen, into your paint and avoid doing damage before you cover it. But a cover is always good, and you avoid UV damage if you're in a high sunlight area, which will degrade your interior over time. So
Nick just accidentally proved I'm not a complete idiot. This is what I like about this conversation, because this is how I treated my Mini all winter. Now, my Mini is the cheap $5,000 winter beater, but it parks outside.
Yeah.
And so when I had it clean and clean or a little bit of dirt, I would keep putting the cover on it. When it started to get like salty, I wouldn't put the cover on again until I got it cleaned. So
right.
I actually looked like I kind of knew what I was doing there, which is a nice happy accident. Then there's a new twist. I haven't told you this twist.
Oh, no.
This spring, we have had like gale force winds.
Yeah, we have.
It's been nuts. Now, I park the Mini, sometimes I park it off my driveway in the grass, okay,
right.
Because I get it out of the way because I'm pulling out the Lotus. That's why it's happening.
Right, the Lotus.
So we've been having crazy, crazy winds that have actually been big enough, because the cover on the Mini fits really well, but to actually start moving that cover around and pick it up. And I was like, okay, I don't want to chase the cover into my neighbor's yard. I mean, I'm talking like 30 mile an hour. Is the house going to fall over wind?
It's been nuts. You took up parachuting and
it's been really
parasailing
nuts.
In your driveway.
I had an epiphany.
Okay.
I went and got tent stakes, and I put it in the eyes of the thing, and I tent staked it to the grass, and it's been
really?
Awesome. It's been great.
You tent staked your car to the ground.
Problem solved. I'm not recommending you do that at work, by the way, but I'm just saying, you really want to get nuts. That's when you're tent staking your cover down. Of course, it's 30 mile an hour winds. So I had to do something.
Perfect. Nick, what's your take on the California car duster thing before you put the cover on? Good or bad?
Again, I think that is, depending on how well developed your eye is.
Oh, fantastic caveat.
Delicate. Nice.
Depending on the color of your car. Now, again, as I mentioned before, every time you touch your paint that and it's not perfectly clean, you are technically abrading it. So you are causing micro scratches. Now, a duster, effective tool. I was using one at a photo shoot just this past week. For, you know, when you don't really have time to go over the entire car and wipe it down, but introducing a liquid is always a safer way to go.
Okay.
Just because, again, you're creating a medium between your paint and whatever contaminant is on top of it, as opposed to dragging it across the paint with a duster. However, there are techniques to using the duster that can make it safer. But again, this is really just, with experience, you'll learn, is this too dirty to use a duster, or is this white enough dust that a duster really, you know, poses no harm? And, again, this is all, it's all relative, and I understand that I'm kind of speaking in generalities, but really, if you've got a silver car that's getting dusty, and, you know, you can use a duster on that, and you'll never notice. If it's a black car and you want to go to town on that duster,
how good is your eye?
Driven through a dirt parking lot, I can't say that that's the right thing to do. So there are a ton of different scenarios, but in general, they've been used forever. They're very effective at lifting dust. But if you do it on too dirty of a car, you're probably doing more harm than good.
I want to actually defend all of you listening right now that are more in my camp than Paul's. And I want to just say to all of you, keep driving your car. I'm just going to say, yes, okay. You know how.
It's not that we're not
no,
over here.
I'm just saying the thought of you're always damaging your car is, I'm going to give you a frame of reference. It's the same thing as you're always damaging your kids. No matter how good a parent you think you're being, you're screwing them up in your own special way. Okay. My son will be in therapy in his 30s. I'm sure for something I can't even imagine. I don't even realize I'm doing wrong. This is what car paint ownership is like too. It's just like you're doing something to it. Let's just drive the car and be honest. But thank God that you've taught me a little bit to keep these cars a little nicer than I would on my own.
But you're on the right track, it sounds like, which I'm happy.
Yeah,
Nick's validated your actions here.
I'm not a complete idiot. That's good news.
Okay, so last question before we get to the Formula One question, and that is Ben C's question. He's asking about our thoughts on the nano coating thing. He's saying, you know, it's really expensive. Does it live up to the hype? And Nick, you probably know the most of anybody, these three people on the call here.
I don't even know what that means, by the way. Yeah,
the specialized nano coating. I mean, I've heard of it, you know, done on the paint and then you can paint protection film over that, or you do the paint protection film and then the nano coating.
So basically, just in layman's terms, the nano coating is a silica-based, essentially sacrificial clear coat. And it's a very popular technology. A couple people have figured out how to make it very effectively. And there is plenty of applications where it's awesome. you know, it's very, very, it has a measurable thickness to it. So again, it becomes a sacrificial clear coat of sorts. It beads water really well. It makes your kind of routine maintenance of washing your car very easy. You know, some of the manufacturers promise a warranty. There are differing levels of hardness. Again, the idea is to protect the paint that is on your car by adding a sacrificial layer to it that, again, improves some maintenance. But at the end of the day, its main effect is UV protection. So if all the other facets of it, the water beading, those type of things start to fade, the UV protection almost remains inevitably. We've explored that opportunity quite a bit. However, you know, going back to us being a manufacturer, it's a very specialized manufacturing process. And quite frankly, for us, it doesn't necessarily align with our customer, who is someone who loves to go out and clean their car and polish it and wax it. So it kind of advertises, you know, for 2 years, you don't have to go touch your car other than wash it every once in a while, and washing it becomes faster and easier. Great. There are people that love that. The people that we relate to that are enthusiasts that, again, need to have the level of detail to know, what kind of damage they're doing to their car, how safe to be with their car, they're not necessarily lining up to do nano coating. The other thing is that it's so expensive, because if you were to put a 2-year fix on your car and the paint were not flawless beneath it, you're essentially just sealing a inferior finish under something you can't really adjust for 2 years. So
interesting point.
So it has to be from new, from when the car is brand new, right?
So even, a brand new car is still going to have, you know, the option of dealer-installed scratches. So
yes.
Dealer-installed scratches. Yeah, I love that.
Free to you, by the way.
Yeah, don't ever have them wash your car if you're taking delivery of a new car. Just do it yourself, trust me.
I'm wondering if you can dip your kids in the nano coating, because I was hearing, like, milk runoff, the orange juice just beads right up, you can hose your kids off.
The amount of terrible parenting advice in this one podcast alone is near staggering.
Can you dip your kids in this stuff? Hey, I did my car, my kids, my house. The driveway's fine. Look at the water runoff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's somebody that will tell you can do that, but... You know, it is a really awesome technology, and what I appreciate is that it's pushing the boundary of coatings and surface care. I really do, you know, love that aspect of it. But for us, again, I think for most people, it's a one-time fix. And, you know, if you've got a brand new Ferrari and you've got $2,500 to spend on a detailer that is going to, you know, massage your paint to perfection and apply this thing, great, go for it. It's not necessarily the solution for the guy that has a free Sunday and wants to make his car look as good as possible.
Right.
That's great.
Okay, the Formula One question. This was from Dale. He was wondering, which Formula One team would we all drive for? Which would you drive for? What do you think? I actually just watched the Spanish Grand Prix over the weekend, and Lewis won.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like the world came back to normal. He set the pole position.
Yeah.
He won the race.
Anyway, Fiestas aren't 7,500 and Lewis Hamilton won F1.
If you'd like to debate me about the Formula One drivers, you know, the Vettel fans versus the Hamilton fans, you know, then the world explodes. So, yes, I get that. But, you know, I can happily take up the last place. I know that I can come in last in a race. I know that I can do that.
We are capable of that. Yeah.
Anybody that would take me, really.
That's the truth of it. I mean, but let's be honest. I have to say Lotus, but I have to say Lotus during the John Player special era. Those are just such
good,
cool cars.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm thinking anybody that would take me, but honestly, I'm not thinking of the front runners necessarily, because there's so much pressure. Not that there's not with the midfield, but, you know, I'm loving the mid-pack runners. I like Renault. I like Force India. I like Williams.
I love that Alfa's back.
Yes.
It's just cool
team.
It's just cool to see that brand back in F1.
Yeah.
That's
cars
cool
look great.
Yeah.
Like I said, I could be last in any race. I know I can at least do that. Maybe I'll crash, but, you know.
I left the pit lane. Oh, look, I'm actually going around the track. Oh, look, they're all passing me. Man, this is fun.
Bucket list checked. We're good. Nick, what about you?
So I've got two answers. If I were driving yesterday in the Spanish Grand Prix, I'd want to be in a Ferrari. I love the team right now. I also love watching the Haas team. I like that they're an American team and that they're kind of coming up and they're improving. Unfortunately, Mr. Grosjean can't keep the car on the track and is having some bad luck.
I noticed that.
They've been competitive. You know, more than anything, I just like that I've been watching these races and they're competitive and interesting and it's exciting again. I mean, getting past the halo and maybe the car not being as aesthetically pleasing as some of the older ones. I love watching interesting Formula One racing. I cannot wait for Monaco in 2 weeks. It's my favorite race.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of people's favorite race, but, you know, and then it's followed by the Indy 500. So in our family, it's a big deal. That day is awesome. But if I were racing in the past, it would have to be any of the Marble McLarens. I love the M23s, you know, the James Hunt.
Yeah,
good one.
Moss. I've been fortunate enough to meet Jochen Moss twice.
Have you really?
He was at Amelia Island last year. I met him one other time when we actually took his car to a race in Monaco. And, you know, everybody can come in last, right? But you still have to finish and you can't hit a wall.
This is true.
And Jochen Moss came up and said, "Hey, you didn't wreck my car. That's great." You know, 40 years later,
it's a good day.
Still looking after his car, and it was still running around. So I just love the Volcano Red and Marble and McLarens, and they were competitive for a really long time. So, it has to be a Cosworth V8, just a big screamer.
That's cool.
That's what I like. I like the old school stuff.
Nice.
And of course, Senna. You know, Senna was in those cars.
Yeah, for sure.
Niki Lauda was in those cars.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the team, I think, historically.
That's mad.
Didn't I just see Bernie just bought Senna's 88 or 89 F1 car, the white and red Marlboro car? Didn't he just buy that at auction? I thought I saw an article
Somebody
on that.
Somebody just did for big money, yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Yikes. All right. Well, Nick, thank you so much for being on with us and providing the education and insight. And
yeah. My brain's almost scrambled, but
I love this
stuff for sure.
I love it. I love learning about this stuff. And
I hope I didn't scare anybody, but, you know, again, I'm pretty far off the deep end of the car detailing. And anytime you guys have questions, you can bounce them off me. I'd love to come back and help more people feel more confident about doing that, even though I hope I didn't scare anybody away from it. So.
Well, but you have the spectrum in Paul and I, so we're trying to walk carefully with everybody. But thank you guys for being a supporter of what we do. We love supporting you guys as well because we do genuinely use your stuff.
Absolutely.
So that's
yeah.
been great.
Yeah, and that's griotsgarage.com. And if you've got your own debate, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com, or you can find us on the website, everydaydriver.com. You can find all the details about the upcoming pilgrimage trip for 2018 and for all the upcoming TV season that's coming at you, season 3. We've got two more episodes to shoot here.
Yeah, and first week of July is the first episode on Velocity, so
right.
Guess what I'm doing when I'm not shooting? I'm editing.
Yeah, it's coming at us. Guys, thank you again so much. Looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.